debate with between him and Sam Harris and Michael Shermer?
Yeah, in fact, if you go on YouTube and Google the Future of God debate, you'll bring it up. It's in 12 parts. It's an excellent debate with Michael Shermer, Sam Harris, and Deepak Chopra. I recommend our listeners check it out. Very entertaining.
Sounds good. So I guess this is Don saying eyes open, minds on.
And this is Ethan saying thanks for listening. And next week we will be back with a full cast on Radio Freethinker.
Government and Big Pharma have entered into a secret conspiracy in which secret government contracts are sold to Big Pharma that allow for secret chemicals to be placed in coffee seeds, all under the watchful eye of Big Coffee, who is secretly working with other world forces, all in a sinister plot to get alien embryos in our coffee so Big Pharma can sell us alien contraceptive pills. Or, if you'd rather get some rational news, check out Radio Free Thinker, the radio show / podcast that promotes skepticism, critical thinking, and science education. Every Tuesdays at 4 p.m. on CITR 101.9 FM in Vancouver.
Do you have an approaching test or exam and need help studying? Well, it's time to prepare yourself. The Study Van, www.studyvan.com, is a 100% free website dedicated to helping you achieve excellence. MCAT, history, chemistry, French, math, biology, the Study Van covers it all. Tools are provided so you can create your own study group and do what you need to do. Ace your exam. The Study Van will help you help yourself. Give it a shot. You have nothing to lose, as once again, it is a 100% free studying resource. So remember, when you need to study, go to the Study Van, www.studyban.com.
Pharma have entered into a secret conspiracy in which secret government contracts are sold to Big Pharma that allow for secret chemicals to be placed in coffee seeds, all under the watchful eye of Big Coffee, who is secretly working with other world forces, all in a sinister plot to get alien embryos in our coffee so Big Pharma can sell us alien contraceptive pills. Or, if you'd rather get some rational news, check out Radio Free Thinker, the radio show / podcast that promotes skepticism, critical thinking, and science education. Every Tuesdays at 4 p.m. on CITR 101.9 FM in Vancouver.
Do people feel like making some noise tonight?
You're listening to CITR 101.9 FM Vancouver, Cookie Monster's favorite radio station.
Good night, Chicago! Brutal!
It's the Muppet Show with our very special guest star, Shirley Bassey! Yeah!
Kind of torture to have to watch the show.
But now let's get things started. Why don't you get things started?
It's time to get things started
on the most sensational, inspirational, celebrational, motivational. This is what we call a Muppet Show.
Camilla, your uncle's calling.
Everybody, welcome to Winner's Barbecue on 101.9 FM, CITR Radio, Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada, every Tuesday from 4:30 to 6 p.m. A little Muppet theme song there to start the show. That's actually from season 5. Season 5. So there you have it. I like that one. I like that one. Lots to get to on the show today. We're going to actually talk a little National Football League at 5 o'clock with my friend BJ Brian Bass, Mr. Las Vegas, and Milan Dragicevic, head coach of the UBC Thunderbird men's hockey team, will also be with us on the show. But here to start things off today, a member of the... You guys have done pretty well the last 8 years. You just haven't won the big one. From the UBC Thunderbird men's basketball team, assistant coach Vern Knopp. Vern, a cheap shot by me to start the show, but nonetheless, how you doing? Are you there? Vern? Oh, crap. Hold on. Let's try that button. That button. All right. Apparently, we're having technical problems. Let's try that. Vern? Vern? No. All right. We're going to have to take a quick break. You'll be right back. You're listening to 101.9 FM.
The state of hip-hop right now, man, as far as the way I see it, I think right now, hip-hop is advancing as far as skills. You got brothers, you know what I'm saying, getting, like, more witty.
There ain't nobody to be pretty for. Let it rattle. Let the clatter kill him. Let the cataclysm wash. Who really listens? Precision with a verse draws a cry. Draw a line between an easy melody and peace of mind.
You got DJs doing all kind of crazy shit on the turntables. I like where it's going, and I like, you know what I'm saying, the creative process that brothers is trying to take it to right now.
Rally Rails and Brendan Butter in the place to be. Crimes and Treasons Radio, 101.9 FM, Vancouver, CITR.ca, every Tuesday, 9 till 11.
Dynamite!
Okay, are you there this time? Did you not hang up the phone?
I'm here.
Wow. With us on the line, assistant coach from the UBC Thunderbird men's basketball team, Vern Knopp. Vern, how you doing today?
I'm doing well, thanks.
Oh, boy. Now you're not coming in right. Hold on here. Let's try. Hold on. How's that? Keep talking.
I can hear you. No problem.
All right. I think I've fixed the problem. I don't know. All right. Vern, the basketball team, of course, it's been a few weeks now since dropping the national championship game to Saskatchewan. Has the wound begun to heal?
Yeah, I think it's healed up now. Had time to kind of reflect, I guess you could say. And do I have any more answers? No, I don't think so. But it's got to the point where I'm over it, I guess you could say.
There you go. And when you look back now, what you think was the reason you didn't win the game? When you're able to look at it with, say, a bit of a clearer head.
Yeah, well, I think it just came down to the fact that, we didn't play our game. All year we were able to play our style of basketball, and for whatever reason, come that tournament time, we could only put a good half together. We would just struggle to put a good 40 minutes away, and we just ran into a team that was playing their best basketball that time of the year. From the second half on, they were just the hottest team in the CIS, and they continued to play that way throughout the tournament. So,
and one thing that sort of caught me analyzing the statistics of a certain player, Vern, Josh White for your basketball team now, it's 2 years in a row now he's gotten hurt just as the playoffs are starting. I think that's definitely something you guys are going to have to look at for next year.
Well, I mean, it's kind of out of our control. I mean, you look at Josh's minutes; he wasn't averaging over 30 minutes a game, so it wasn't injuries from overuse. It's just unlucky. It's just one of those things that has happened now 2 years in a row, and it seems like every year before we go to nationals or before playoffs, someone gets hurt. Jordan, you several years back, the last practice before we were leaving for nationals breaks his thumb and couldn't play, and then he tried to play but he couldn't, and then a year after that Bryson Cool goes down in the Canada West semifinals and they're barely able to just got back for nationals and just still wasn't healthy. Just seems that's the way it goes. We get healthy throughout most of the year, and then for whatever reason we just get a freak injury late in the year that seems to hurt us. But Josh was healthy. He was healthy come nationals, and I'm sure he'd be the first to to not use that as an excuse. It's just one of those things. He was the focal point, being player of the year, and you know, every team was out there to prove to prove otherwise.
Yeah, because Vern, also looking at his stats, I mean, I'm just reading off statistics here. Josh White in his career back at Victoria with you guys also, he really hasn't had that huge statistical playoff game yet. I think his career high is 21 points. He's never hit double digits in assists. I mean, are you next year going to sort of tell Josh, look, you're the top player of the country, you're CIS player of the year, come playoff time, just do your thing and don't worry so much about getting other people involved. We give you permission to just take over the game.
Yeah, well, I think since Josh has come to UBC, we've pretty much taken that approach that it's his team to take over, and he's got to be more involved, whether that's him scoring more or him setting up guys. But you know, he's been told that it's just got to come. He's just got to, I guess, start believing and start doing it himself. Not worry about what other people think and just worry about more of himself.
Because that is something. Hey, you just look at it. He hasn't had that huge playoff game, which your Casey Archibalds and your Chris Dix had. Josh has yet to do that.
That's a good point. I haven't really gone over all his playoff numbers. But, you know, like I said, it's that time of year. There's no secrets. Everybody knows what your strengths is, and everybody knows that Josh's strength is going left, and that Sass did a very good job of forcing him to the right side. And although Josh has gotten better the last year or two of going right, it's still something that's still probably the weakest part of his game that he needs to improve on.
There you have it. Vern, and any word on recruits, players returning next year? I know it's still so early in the offseason. You know, apparently some of your transfers trying to get into school. The kid Plum from Fraser Valley. Any updates on any of these guys?
No, everything's pretty much status quo. We're still, Coach Hanson's still going through the postseason talks with the players, I don't have any new information as far as, other than Mike Lewandowski committing to us about a month ago, that he'll be coming on board, and that's the only real news right now.
That's the kid from Pitt Meadows, the power forward?
6'7" post player is going to come in and hopefully help us out with scoring and rebounding.
There you go. Vern, did you check out the NCAA championship game last night between Butler and Duke?
Of course I did. I watched the whole game with a couple of friends, and it was nice to see a nice competitive game. It's one of the better games, well-played games that I've seen in a long time. Bit of a defensive struggle, but both teams played extremely hard and two very smart teams, so it was an entertaining game.
What did you think of those two teams, Butler and Duke?
Oh, well, they're the two best teams for the last month. They both, you don't get to that final game by being lucky. Two extremely well-coached teams, a team that had a lot of veteran leadership, and it definitely showed the way they performed throughout the whole tournament. So, were they the best teams in the tournament? Maybe not, but they were the best teams at that point because, like I said, they won their five games to get there.
One thing, and you of course see it in the CIS level, I thought, who is that Duke big man? What was his name?
Brian Zubek.
Zubek. How was he not called for a foul? Do you know the play I'm talking about with about 35 seconds to go?
I think it came down to a point. I thought the refs, you know, that there's at times they made some inconsistent calls, but at that late in the game, you really want the players to decide it. I mean, teams are playing so aggressive and so physical. You can call a foul on any time. And you know, there was a lot of free throw shot, actually, especially by Butler down in the second half. I think it was just a case they just kind of wanted the players to decide it.
Okay, don't call the foul when two guys are just battling for a rebound down low there. Hey?
There was both ways. There was a play earlier where Howard two-handed Zubek right underneath the board and got a rebound as well. So it went both ways. There were missed calls both ways. It's the human error of the game. So I don't think that had any overall any bearing of the game outcome of the game.
Your thought on Butler? Obviously, the guy missing the Hail Mary three just barely at the buzzer. But your thought on what they did on that last possession? What was his name? What was the guy's name? Howard?
It was Zubek that missed the free throw on purpose.
No, not that play. But Butler's last possession, they had it with about 15 seconds to go. And whoever that guy was, he was shooting it no matter what.
He's been their go-to guy all year and all through the tournament. He's been their best player, and everybody in the building, anybody watching that game, knew he was going to get the ball, and it was his shot to help him try to win it. So, and you know, tough shot to hit, but when he let it go, it looked like it was going in. It just, I guess the basketball gods decided that it wasn't going to go in.
And you agree with Duke missing the free throw on purpose with four seconds to go?
No, I actually hate that call. I couldn't. I think it took his team by surprise because none of them looked like they were prepared to go after the loose ball. I think they were expecting him to hit it, and I just thought it was a terrible, terrible decision just for the simple reason if you hit it, they still have to go the whole court in 3.6. They're going to shoot a three. They won't have time to get a two. So at worst, if you hit it, if they hit a fluke shot, you go into overtime. If he hits it, which he was close to, you lose. You don't have another chance. So in that situation, 1 second left maybe, I'd probably miss it in time because there's not a time to get a decent shot off. But even the Butler player, I think he even had time to take another dribble if he wanted to get even a little closer. And so I just totally disagree with missing the free throw.
Awesome. Vern, where I'm going with this is, you know, we had Bob Phillip on, your athletic director, last week, and really got into where you guys are at in that whole NCAA business. It seems that really, quite frankly, now I can safely say it's completely out of his hands. He doesn't know what's going on. There's the president, the seven executives. It's all up to these guys. I called their office last week. The president refused to give me an interview at this time. And the guy, like the press guy who I was talking to, told me, well, there is a one-year ticking clock on this, you know. He backed off a bit after he told me that, but he did say something along those lines. So it's basically nobody really knows what's going on, which is kind of fun. But my point is just watching that basketball game, if UBC does go, obviously they'll start NCAA Division II, but are we at a point now in NCAA basketball, and you see it even in football, because if UBC does go NCAA Division I, they're probably going to join one of these AKA mid-major conferences, but just watching what Butler's done in basketball, watching what Boise State and Texas Christian did in football this past year, are we getting to the point where these mid-majors can actually win these national titles?
Well, I obviously, with Butler getting to the finals, there is always that possibility. You get to a tournament with single elimination, there's always that possibility of a team getting hot and having a chance to win. With that said, I still think it's still a rarity that Butler was able to get to the final game and to have a chance to win. Just ultimately, it comes down to finances. So many of these schools, I mean, even Duke is a small school, but they have lots of money. They're always going to be able to go after those top recruits as far as, you know, offering full ride scholarships and housing and whatnot. So, you know, and over the years, I think the top 25 teams, the top number one seeds usually are the superior team. It's just a tribute to Butler, I think, their coaching staff and their schools and their players, keeping their players in the school for their, you know, so many of them are third and fourth year players. Even looking at Duke, they've kind of changed the recruiting where they're not going for the one-year wonders where, like, the John Walls of Kentucky are just going to play 1 year and then go pro. I think Duke got burned by that years ago by Elton Brand, William Avery, Mike Dunleavy leaving after 1 or 2 years. And you look at their starting lineup, they had, you know, two seniors and three juniors on their roster playing most of their minutes. And I think you're going to see a lot of, you know, that's what gives the mid-major teams a chance. They're keeping their players in the school for 3-4 years. Where the top recruits, the top schools, maybe sometimes just take a chance on a guy, having him 1 year and just try to hit lightning in a bottle. But with that said, ultimately, I think that the big money schools are going to be there more times than not.
Yeah, but it does seem, so is that what you're saying? Because correct me if I'm wrong, Corey Maggette, another guy who left Duke early. Yeah.
Exactly.
All right. I used to follow the NBA when we had the Grizzlies, you know.
Well, and I think that was a case where Duke had a few down years when Coach Krzyzewski was hurt, and they struggled with, they tried to get back into it quickly by recruiting these guys, and then it's tough to run a program when you only have a guy there for 1 or 2 years. Where I've noticed the last 5 years, he's really gone back to recruiting the guys like Kyle Singler, John Shires, Nolan Smith, guys that, you know, like probably Kyle Singler is probably the only guy that might even be drafted in the first round next year, or if he goes out this year. But, you know, he's probably going to be just an average player at best. So he's electing to maybe not go after the top guys, or maybe the second-tier guys where he's going to keep them for 3-4 years and have a chance to develop them into the program, to how they run their things.
So is that the way you sort of see it developing in the NBA? Because you go back to Hansborough, played the 4 years at North Carolina. Florida was able to keep their guys together for a few years when they won. So is that the way you see it now going, where when you're recruiting these guys, like you said, avoid the lightning in a bottle player, and when you do bring a guy and say, look, we're taking you here at Duke, you can do what you want, but we're expecting you to be here for 3 years. At least.
Yeah, I think if they're smart, that's what they kind of look at doing that. You're always going to have a coach like John Calipari from Kentucky, who also did it at Memphis, where he's going to, you know, just take the one kid that's going to be there 1 year and promise them that he's going to get ready for the NBA, and he's going to get those type of players. But I think you'll see more teams now, look at Butler and take the blueprint from Butler and Duke and say, you know what, maybe we don't go after the guys that are only going to be here for a year. We take the guys that are going to be here for longer. And it's a chance. I mean, it's experience is just people just don't understand how important experience can be for guys. Part of the success at UBC now we've had for the last 5-6 years is the fact that we're always having, four or five guys in their fourth and fifth years. It makes for a huge difference come playoff time, come in the close games where, look at Alex Murphy and Brent Malice are going to their fifth year next year, and they're going to be they could be potentially going to Nationals hopefully for their fifth year, every year of their career. And, that just can't go, that's exactly what you want as far as a program. You always got to have those veteran players. And I thought Butler especially and Duke reap the rewards.
Yeah, sticking with Butler, though, is the point is, this is my question. This is a breakthrough. A mid-major has never made it to a national championship game, and you've sort of seen it the last few years. George Washington did make it to the Final Four a few years back. Is the game changed now? Are these mid-majors legitimate contenders now?
Oh, I think they're legitimate. I think they're legitimate contenders. Time will tell. I mean, George Mason getting to the Final Four is one thing. Getting Butler to the finals is another. But, you got to get lucky in a tournament like that, too. You got to have a team, someone knock off Kansas and knock off Kentucky. And it's more than just skill and playing well in the tournament. You got to have a bit of luck as well. But, I think the mid-majors, they're proving that they can compete. Hmm. It's just a matter of what type of program you have, what type of players you want to go after, and especially the coach. You got to be able to keep your coach there a long time, and it'll be interesting to see now what happens with Butler now that their Coach Smith has had so much success. Whether you got the big schools now, many schools are probably going to be coming after him and offering him, $5 million a year to come and coach for them, and that's the other problem with some of these mid-major schools. When they do have some success, the bigger schools come calling for their head coaches, and that's why it's tough for them to compete.
Last thing here, Vern, NCAA division is being talked about on this campus. Obviously watching the Final Four yesterday, that will not be the league that UBC is joining if they hop in. You're in the CIS now. You're looking at going for at least an extended period, the NCAA division two, if in fact you go. You're not going like the hockey team to Division One. You're going Division Two. What's the difference between CIS and NCAA Division Two? And really, what is the NCAA Division Two?
Well, it's obviously a level below the NCAA Division One, where the players that aren't good enough to get Division One scholarships go to the Division Two schools. Obviously, there's not as much money as at those schools. As far as comparing it to CIS, I think the leagues are very similar. We've played some Division II schools in the Washington area and had some success against them. It's a step down from Division I, no question, and that's one of the questions I think UBC's had going in is, do they want to be stuck in Division II for X amount of years when, the real prestige and the real money is in Division I? So that'll be kind of yet to be seen.
So what you're telling me, though, Vern, NCAA Division II to CIS, really no difference in the quality of basketball?
We haven't seen the elite of Division II schools, but I think they're very similar. If you're talking the top 10 schools in Canada competing with the top 25 Division II schools, I could see definitely a lot of similarities. But with that said, I don't watch a lot of Division II basketball myself, so it's kind of really hard for me to comment on it. I just go from what the teams we've seen. I think we've played two or three teams in our time at UBC, and we haven't lost to a Division II school yet. So, and where we've beaten lower-tier Division I schools. So it's not a huge step up as far as the playing level goes. I think the huge issue is that we'll be able to offer full-ride scholarships.
So that is an issue right there. Your thoughts on it, Vern? Can you give me an opinion? What do you think on this whole issue?
I'm totally out of the loop. I'm on a personal level, I'm totally happy being where we are right now and playing in Canada. I think it's a sport that has a lot to offer that is continually growing year to year. With that said, I understand UBC's desire to go NCAA. My only fear is that they'll go Division Two and get stuck in Division Two and never have the opportunity to go up to Division One. And if that's the case, I think that'd be a huge disappointment, not only to the athletes, but to the program and to the fans out of the Point Grey area, just because ultimately, if you were going to go NCAA, you want to be Division One because that's where the big boys play.
And how is your team? Because you guys have actually even fared pretty well against NCAA Division I teams at the CIS level.
Oh, no question. We've had Georgia come in, and we beat them by, I believe we beat them by, I want to say 17 or something. Cal Northridge, we beat them in double figures. Hampton over the years, even I think back in Casey Archibald's era, we played Arizona. We actually had a lead with 5 minutes to go and ended up losing by five. We've competed well against those teams. Now, would we be able to compete with the top 25 schools? No, not right away, at least for sure. Obviously, we'd have to, keep all our best players in Canada, and then even though I'm not sure how good we'd be able to be as far as what level we'd get to. But there's no question as far as the mid schools in Division One, then lower tiers, there's no question we can compete and even be better than those schools.
So if UBC does go NCAA and they're playing Division One and say 2 years in, they're not making the tournament, I can start calling for Kevin Hansen's head?
Well, I think you'd need a little more than 2 years, just because the simple fact right now, it's until we make a decision until UBC makes a decision whether they're going Division One or Division Two, that's going to kind of hurt recruiting to a little bit. And then you got to have, like when he first took over the job, it takes 3, 4, 5 years to really start your own program, and really going Division Two to some degree would be starting over in some ways, because you're opening up your whole talent pool as well. You're not just having local kids in Western Canada. You're going to be able to go throughout Canada and throughout Washington State even possibly to recruit as well. So you still need time to adapt and to get familiar with all the other schools and with all your competition. But there's no question in my mind, if UBC goes Division One, that we'd be able to, depending on which conference we go in, we can definitely compete.
Awesome stuff, Vern. Last thing here. I have to say, very disappointed UBC won't be playing SFU in basketball next year.
Yeah, in some ways it is kind of disappointing. It's always been a pretty good rivalry. It hasn't been maybe hotly contested the last 5 years. It's disappointing because it's always been a rivalry. But, there's always rivalries that are starting up every year. So hopefully can't get done that next year. The following year we can get something done, because it would be nice to continue the rivalry in some fashion.
Awesome stuff. Vern Knopp from the UBC Thunderbird men's basketball team. Vern, we'll talk again when something's actually going on with your team, okay?
Sounds good. Thanks, Daryl.
Thanks, Vern. All right, that was Vern Knopp, assistant coach, UBC Thunderbird men's basketball team. Of course, 3 weeks ago, lost the CIS National Championship game to Saskatchewan. The reason I was bringing that up with Vern there, the whole Butler-Duke game yesterday, which, of course, Duke have won the national title, is... you saw yesterday, it looks like a mid-major can now compete for a national title, and you just wonder if UBC is in fact able to go NCAA and, down the road go NCAA Division One. Chances are, they're not going to be your Dukes, your North Carolinas, or Kansas, or Kentucky, but hey, these mid-majors are getting it done, so, who knows? Just the topic. Coming up on the show, we're going to take a break, talk a little National Football League with my main man, BJ Bass from Nevada, Las Vegas, and Milan Dragicevic. More NCAA stuff from him. Talking about the way it's really affecting recruiting for the UBC Thunderbird men's hockey team, because this is really the team. Every other team, and this is where the basketball, you talk to them, nothing they could do. They're CIS now. If after 2 years they're going NCAA, all right, we'll adjust. But the hockey, it is just such a weird, wild, and wacky story with Milan Dragicevic and this team. The problem he has, and Milan's going to get into it with us in the interview, I talked to him before the show today, is he currently cannot recruit major junior players. Well, he can, but the problem is major junior players, they can't play NCAA if that's in fact what happened. So that's where the majority of CIS players play. Every team from the University of Alberta who lost in the championship game this year and is by far the premier team in that program, I believe actually played major junior hockey. UBC can basically go to these guys, say, well, you can go to Calgary where you can play for 5 years. You can go to Lethbridge for five. We would love to have you here at UBC, but we can only guarantee you 2 years. That's all we can guarantee. And if we end up applying at the incorrect time, get accepted, and the CIS boots us out after this year, then, yeah, maybe you'll only get 1 year here. It's a major hole for this team. But, you know, talking to Milan about it, I mean, this is the one. This is sort of the gem. You know, talking to Vern there, you heard him talking about NCAA Division II basketball. Yeah, it's true. It, you know, I don't even know if there's a difference. I don't watch NCAA Division II basketball. You know, I don't know. I may, maybe CIS basketball is much better. I really don't know. Plus, you're going to lose all the local rivalries. But the Canada West are idiots the way they run their schedule and their league anyway, so the hell with it. I say just leave. However, the hockey's a whole different story. You have this beautiful rink on campus, and you'll hear Milan talk about the quality of NCAA Division I hockey later on in the interview. So stick around for that. That'll be at about, I don't know, the 540, 535 slot. We're still talking a little NCAA, but next week, I'm going to try to put it together, is going to be a UBC Thunderbird women's volleyball show. They, of course, won their third straight national championship few weeks back, undefeated season. So that's going to be next week. I'm going to try to dedicate about an hour and a half to the UBC Thunderbird, the three-time champion UBC Thunderbird women's volleyball team. Last week, we had Bob Phillip on our show, the athletic director here at UBC, of course. And, you know, we did get into the NCAA because we are in the off, you know, mostly the off-season right now here at UBC. And, you know, I wanted to get into him. What's going on here? And it is such a... just nothing's going on. That's the funny thing. And, you know, it looks like what's going to happen is in about a year, they're going to make the decision. In about a year, we're going to find out at least what's going on. Maybe it's 3 months from now. Maybe it's 5 months from now. I don't really know. Because here's the real weird thing, and I've kind of had this confirmed by various teams and lots of people, is UBC's going to be CIS now for at least two more years, okay? However, if they apply to the NCAA and they apply a little too early in one of the deadlines where, you know, the CIS hasn't quite got their schedule going for 2011-12, UBC will in fact be thrown out of the CIS like SFU was this year. So they won't be able to get that 2 years. So it's weird. I put a call into the president's office. Wouldn't give me the interview. So what are you going to do? Anyways, folks, we are going to take a break. You're listening to Wiener's Barbecue here on 101.9 FM CITR Radio, Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada, every Tuesday from 4:30 to 6 p.m. Just waiting for the Burley to load here. All right, we're back and talk a little National Football League. You're listening to 101.9 FM.
Party is off to a good start. Guests are on time. Everyone's out to have fun and to help others fun.
What's the matter? Doesn't that sound exciting to you?
UBC students have an alternative. Looking to unwind? Check out one of the sub's two licensed establishments.
Ooh, The Gallery Lounge is your location for a wide variety of draft beers at student-friendly prices. Come to the gallery for a relaxed atmosphere and great food, including the famous pizza pretzel. Fellow students provide the entertainment with weekly open mic and karaoke nights. The gallery is located on the main concourse of the sub and open Monday through Saturday till 1 a.m. This business is owned and operated by the AMS, your student society. All the fancy dancing, guess you better find your way back
home. Are you tired of spending your hard-earned money on CDs, compact discs, I mean, DVDs even, whatever, anything that might be better with radio-ness? I'm sick of listening to music without any funny quips in between. No commercials, I mean, come on, what about
Jay,
and
Mark,
and
Jason,
the Bear, all those guys? Now you'll never have to miss out on crazy
Mark Farabee
and Jason
the Bear
Paulette,
because
CITR 101.9 FM in Vancouver
has come up with their own label. That's right. You can listen to music and never have to listen to...
You can listen to music and never have to miss out on the radio-ness.
Listen to Friday Sunrise, Fridays from 7:30 to 9 a.m. on 101.9 CITR with your hosts, Mark Farabee
and Jason Paulette.
Do you want to have your music played? Have your horoscope read, or just
give us some random advice?
Send us an email at fridaysunrise@vanmusic.ca or call us during the show at 604-UBC-CITR or 604-822-2487. Friday Sunrise, Fridays from 7:30 to 9 a.m.
CITR is super popular. We've partnered with great local businesses to bring all our friends discounts in their communities. Say you like to kick it in kits. Show your friends of CITR card at Canterbury Tales Secondhand Books, Rufus's Guitar Shop, Prussian Music, The Eatery, Grindhouse Video, Fresh's Best Salsa & Co., Roy Shoes Limited, Vaz Boutique, Sage Natural Wellness, Gumdrops, Spank Shoes, Banyan Books, and the UBC Bike Kitchen, and save. So become a CITR member, get a free friends card, and feel the love. Well, I want to be your old lover. I want to be your
man. I want you to understand.
Welcome back to the show. With us, are you driving?
I'm driving.
Well, see,
although I almost crashed after that intro.
Do you like the show?
I don't even know what show that is.
Yo Gabba Gabba!
Oh, one of my favorites, Daryl. One of my favorites.
Yeah? Do you?
No.
When's the last time you watched it?
Never even heard about it until just now.
You've never heard of Yo Gabba Gabba?
No, something tells me I'm not really missing out on anything.
It is, it's a kid's show that, like, stoner college kids also like.
Okay, that's the hot new Canadian programming, huh?
It actually came out of your country there, my friend, just so you're aware.
Wow.
It's a Yankee Doodle show, but it showed, I believe Nickelodeon in Canada just picked it up. But it's on, yeah, Nickelodeon in the States. I think they've got it. It's very popular.
So Canada gives this country oil, and we give Canada ya jabba jabba.
Yo gabba gabba. You've seen it. You like it. Just admit it.
Sounds like a fair trade.
There you go. You've honestly never seen Yo Gabba Gabba.
No.
Really? You know, watch it one day, okay? TiVo it.
Probably not going to happen.
Come on. Come on. All right. We'll
All right, fine. Can we move on if I say yes?
Yes, we can. Yes, we can. BJ, let's talk a little NFL. The draft, of course, a very short time away right now. We are. I believe it's 2 weeks Thursday is going to be, or something like that. It's going to be the NFL draft. But a big deal took place. I am a Philadelphia Eagles fan, and of course, he gets traded to the Washington Redskins for a couple picks earlier on in the week. And BJ, the way I look at it is I actually think it was a good deal for Philadelphia. You know, if he gets traded to the Redskins and they end up beating the Eagles, that would be awful and kind of hilarious, to be perfectly honest, because you're really just setting yourself up for that with Philly. But I honestly think Philly believes that, you know, they are going to be able to beat Washington or they wouldn't have made this trade. But, you know, good trade, bad trade. As an Eagles fan, it's just kind of sad that McNabb's done, traded to the Redskins, and they never won a Super Bowl with them. It's just kind of sad that that never got done.
Yeah, clearly probably, you know, the best Philadelphia Eagle ever to take the field. I mean, you know, he was a tremendous part of that team for many, many years. Five NFC championship appearances, one Super Bowl appearance. You know, I kind of think that this will end up being one of those trades, one of those rare trades that works out for both teams. Although I got to tell you, I mean, Andy Reid saying I don't think that you can beat me, Donovan McNabb, I think is going to come back to haunt him. I think it's an absolute given that the Redskins win at least one of those games this season, and I wouldn't be surprised if they win them both. You know, I think McNabb is really going to be fired up. And, you know, for Shanahan, I mean, he has come in and in 3 months entirely changed the look of the Washington Redskins from last year. And this is a team that is going to be vastly different. And, you know, what a great deal for them as far as, you know, now they have this number four pick that, you know, everyone was saying that, you know, Shanahan's going to go quarterback. He's going to go quarterback. Well, why go quarterback at number four when you can go get a guy pretty close to his prime, one of the better quarterbacks in the NFL over the last decade, and then pick an offensive tackle for him at number four? I mean, really a brilliant deal for Shanahan, and you know it really seems to me the Eagles really kind of painted themselves in a corner. You know why you would even publicly announce that you're considering trading McNabb? Once you do that, you have to trade him. And listen, obviously they see something in Kevin Kolb that they think he can be the quarterback for the future in Philadelphia. You know, from what I saw in him out of two games last year, you know, that's a stretch. That's all I saw. Obviously Andy Reid and the coaching staff knows a lot more about him than anybody else.
Yeah, but the other thing you got to figure from Philadelphia is just watching that team last year, and I've always been very pro-keeping McNabb, would have still been pro-keeping McNabb this year, but he's a free agent after this year. They're obviously not going to keep going with him, and they weren't going to get anything. Apparently, they're saying this is perhaps the deepest draft in the last 10 years, so getting an early second rounder, I mean, apparently you're getting a real legitimate player for that pick. So that's one. But the other one is with Philadelphia is they're a really young football team right now. You know, you've got, especially on offense at the skilled positions, Jeremy Maclin and DeSean Jackson at wide receiver. You've got LeShady McCoy at the running back position. Real young football team. And just watching that team last year play the Dallas Cowboys in the playoffs and watching them play really just last year in general, you could just see it. They weren't a good enough football team anymore. They didn't have it anymore, and that's where I think trading McNabb's good. It's like what we had is just not good enough to even probably get back to the championship game anymore, let alone win the whole Super Bowl. So that's where I see it as a good trade for Philly, which, you know, you look at it, Brian Dawkins gone now, Brian Westbrook gone now, and now Donovan McNabb among many others. quite frankly, let's see if Andy Reid can keep it going in Philly and really have that second really solid football team in what is definitely the Andy Reid era. You know, can he do it again, basically?
Well, and you know, Darryl, for all of those reasons is exactly why I don't think that this trade will be good for them this year. I think there's just far too much change on that team. And having kind of, you know, that sturdying quarterback, you know, kind of seems like, you know, listen, DeSean Jackson was injured for a lot of last year. And, you know, Darryl, when it comes down to it, I've been saying this for about 5 or 6 years now, the Philadelphia Eagles will never win with Andy Reid as a coach. There's one thing we learned from watching the Saints beat the Colts in the Super Bowl this year is that coaches can win you or cost you championships, and Andy Reid is the kind of guy that's going to cost you championships. He's too conservative, and I just don't, I don't think that he's the guy to get him to the promised land, so to speak, but I just feel like it's too much change. You have too much new blood on offense, but yeah, listen, what do I know?
Well, no, but, you know, you're looking at it from just a this year perspective. I think if they kept McNabb, they weren't going to win it anyways, you know? So let's take a shot. Because Kevin Cobb's contract's up after this year. So if he's not playing this year, he's walking after this season. And what a better time to get a look at him than right now. You also have, don't forget, the backup quarterback there. If Cobb doesn't work out, you know, Mr. Dog Ring, Michael Vick, is waiting in the wings there. So...
And also a free agent after this season.
Well, that's the thing. So I like Philadelphia being the young team that they are. You know, this is a team that they might even be doing a little bit of a rebuild this year, but they've got a lot of really good pieces together. Reed's been real solid with them over the years. They might be good enough to win this year. It's very doubtful, but you get a feeling that if it doesn't happen this year, you know, there's going to be a veteran quarterback available. They could always draft a quarterback. I think they'll be able to turn it around rather quickly. And they might even still be good this year. You know, Michael Vick, he was the first road quarterback to ever win a road game in Lambeau Field in the playoffs, remember. So,
yeah, no, Darryl, to be honest with you, I don't think the quarterback position is where the Eagles are going to hurt the most. I think it's that running back where they're. I think that's the biggest question mark on that team is can Chase McCoy be a full-time running back in the NFL? I don't know that that's been proven that he can.
Well, we'll find out more what the Eagles are doing at the NFL draft. The other team, the team people follow in this area, of course, the Seattle Seahawks, big draft for them coming up. They obviously got to credit them last year for that trade they made with Denver, trading their second-round pick for Denver's first-rounder this year, which, after the great Bronco collapse, turned out to be a real solid selection. It's saying today that it looks like Pete Carroll looking at perhaps drafting Tim Tebow in the first round. That's being talked about right now.
Well, Darryl, I can certainly tell you that would be the biggest mistake that Pete Carroll has ever made as a football coach. You know, listen, obviously, you know, I didn't like the Charlie Whitehurst move. I thought they moved down way too many spots. But, you know, I think with that trade, you got to give Carroll the benefit of the doubt. That's his first deal. He targeted him. He went after him. There were more proven quarterbacks on the board. You know, whether it be a Dell Holm, a Derek Anderson, obviously Donovan McNabb. I mean, there's been some pretty serious quarterbacks that have traded teams. So obviously there's something he sees in Whitehurst that he believes in. And I think that takes a little bit of the onus of having to draft a quarterback high in the Thursday, even Friday of the draft. You know, I think that he is now in a position of being able to go in and draft a guy in the sixth and the seventh and eighth round and try to find, you know, that Tom Brady gem or, you know, that Matt Castle that can sit on the bench for a couple of years or even a season or two. You know, learn from a guy like Hasselbeck who will only be too happy to teach and train the guys coming up behind him just like Brett Favre did to him. And I think that would be an incredible mistake. They have so many needs on both sides of the ball with the amount of talent that's going to be taken within those first 14 picks. To take a project like Tim Tebow is absolutely asinine.
Charlie Whitehurst, you brought him up, the new Seattle Seahawks quarterback. What'd they give up for him again? What was the trade?
They swapped a second for a third and then gave up another mid-round pick. And listen, Daryl, this is a guy that's like literally taken, you know, two snaps in regular season NFL football. So, I mean, certainly, you know, they had to see something or be told by somebody that, you know, this kid has some game, because to make a deal like that for, you know, someone that no one's ever seen play in the NFL is it's quite a risk. But like I said, you know, I think that was Pete Carroll's first big move, and I think you have to give him the benefit of the doubt with that move. And realistically, it's probably 2 to 3 years until they see if it pans out.
Well, he is already 28 years old, or he's 27 years old. He'll be 28 by the early in the season. He went to Clemson. That was the other thing I looked at. Was this a Pac-10 player? He went to Clemson. Very strange, hey? I've never heard of the guy.
Daryl, it really is. Not only, you know, was he not in the Pac-10, but Seattle didn't hire anybody from San Diego. So there's not like it's, you know, the quarterback coach from San Diego comes to Seattle, oh, hey, we got to get this guy. There doesn't really seem to be a connection anywhere, which only makes it that much more strange. But like I said, I mean, you know, that's Carroll's first move, and I'm willing to give him the benefit of the doubt on that move. You know, I certainly think it makes a lot more sense than Mike Holmgren going to Cleveland and signing Seneca Wallace.
Is that where Seneca Wallace? I'm a little behind here. Seneca Wallace is a Brown now?
The Cleveland Browns quarterback competition is between Seneca Wallace and Jake Delhomme.
Oh, you gotta love that, hey?
I gotta tell you, it's gonna be really fun watching Mike Holmgren destroy this organization for the next decade.
What are you gonna do?
He will not win a division. No way, no how.
NFL draft coming up, of course. That's the big one. It's gonna be, yeah, it is 2 weeks Thursday, April 22nd. It's prime time this year, 4:30 on the West Coast for us. You know,
just the first round, correct?
Yeah, just the first round on the first day. Rounds 2 and 3 are on Friday, and rounds 4 and 7 are on Sunday. Of course, the two defensive tackles being touted as the first picks. It really kind of confuses me when you read about the guys coming out. Everybody talking about Sam Bradford early in this draft, and I just find it really strange that a guy who gets injured a couple times in college is being touted as a franchise quarterback when, of course, you got to pay him all that money. I mean, he's going to be making more than Tom Brady. Do you really want to give the keys to your franchise to a guy who's already been injured twice in college?
Yeah, and it's especially, you know, the Rams released Mark Bulger after a long time with the organization. You know, so it certainly seems like they're going Bradford at once. You know, obviously this kind of draft loophole is, you know, the first thing that's probably going to be addressed, or one of the first things in the new CBA agreement that they're working on, so that he is not paid more than Tom Brady before he's ever taken a snap. But, you know, I guess it's kind of one of those things of, you know, eventually you have to address quarterback, and if you're the Rams, you're not going to be competitive this year, so why not draft the guy, see if he's going to be the guy. You know, I don't know what else they have no other plan, it seems like, to put someone else behind center. So it really seems like it's him or nothing.
or who's the other guy? Jake Locker out of Washington's another guy?
Well, you know, that's the thing that it seems to me about the quarterbacks in this year's draft is it seems like there's, you know, about 8 or 9 guys. It seems like it's a really deep quarterback draft. Some guys that, you know, don't have kind of the marquee status of the Braffords, you know, the Quathams, the Tebows, but certainly look like they might be, you know, quality NFL quarterbacks. And you know, that's exactly the reason why I think, you know, Carroll drafting Tebow in the first round is ludicrous, because there's guys out there that you can get later in the draft and obviously for a lot cheaper. You know, the one thing I'll say for the Rams is obviously they need to put somebody behind center now. And, I mean, how many years do you think Steve Spagnuolo is going to have left to turn that team around? I mean, last year it almost seemed like they went backwards.
Yeah, well, and you got to look at what the Miami Dolphins have done in the last 2 years. I mean, they're definitely putting pressure on these teams that, you know, yeah, you're in the doldrums, but, you know, 2-3 years, if you haven't put it together, what do we need you for? Because Miami, where were they? 1-15 and right away turned into a decent team, you know. Not a great team, but a decent team. So it can be done. The Detroit Lions, St. Louis Rams, all that kind of stuff.
Well, and again, you know, look at Shanahan and look how what he's done with that team in such little time. With it before even the draft. I mean, that's why I love what he did is he's saying, you know, I don't have to rebuild this team. We can be competitive now. We can be competitive this year. And I mean, you know, if you're a Redskins fan, you got to love that attitude coming from Shanahan.
There you go. You going to watch the Masters?
Probably going to tune in. I mean, how could you not, right? It's going to be interesting.
That's in the news a bit right now, hey?
Yeah, just a bit.
I don't know. I'll watch, but I don't really have.
How many majors, if any, does Tiger win this year?
I'll say one. Why not? Because that's what he probably normally does. One or two.
I did bet Daryl that he will win no majors. I got 2-1 on it, which I thought was, you know, some decent odds.
You got odds on it.
I got odds on winning no majors.
Oh wow.
You know, I got to say, I heard a really interesting point earlier today coming from the unlikely source of Howard Stern. And Howard Stern said that he believes Tiger Woods will be the best golfer he has ever been in his career because he will not be distracted by all of the extracurricular activities around him. And you know what? That's a pretty good point.
Or maybe he needed those extracurriculars, BJ.
Yeah, you know, I mean, come on, you know, we know the lifestyle that these athletes lead and you know, need. I don't know that need is
yeah, yeah,
is
yeah,
in
yeah,
there.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, I think the amount of time that Tiger would spend in a day text messaging skanks and hoochies can now be set, you know, devoted to more training and you know, working on his swing, whatever it might be. You know, it was a really interesting point coming from you know, an even more interesting perspective.
There you go. Awesome. Good stuff. BJ Bass from Nevada, Las Vegas. BJ, thank you, as always, for doing this today.
CJ Spiller for president.
Thanks for doing this, B.
All right, bye.
All right, everybody. Yeah, a little change up there. Okay, you're listening to Wiener's Barbecue here on 101.9 FM, CITR Radio, Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada. We got to take a quick break here. When we're back, it'll be Milan Dragicevic, head coach, UBC Thunder men's hockey team. You're listening to 101.9 FM.
CITR is super popular. We've partnered with great local businesses to bring all our friends discounts in their communities. Say you like to kick it in kits. Show your friends of CITR card at Canterbury Tales Secondhand Books, Rufus's Guitar Shop, Prussian Music, The Eatery, Grindhouse Video, Fresh's Best Salsa & Co., Roy Shoes Limited, Vaz Boutique, Sage Natural Wellness, Gumdrops, Spank Shoes, Banyan Books, and the UBC Bike Kitchen, and save. So become a CITR member, get a free friends card, and feel the love.
Well, I want to be your old lover.
CITR loves its friends. Having a Friends of CITR card entitles you to awesome discounts from businesses in your community. Maybe downtown is your stomping ground. Present your CITR card at 212 Productions Limited, Beat Street Records, Woo Vintage Clothing, Hits Boutique, Dream Apparel and Articles for People, Scratch Records, The Fall Tattooing, Flaming Angel Designs, Spank Clothing, Heart and Soul, Pacific Cinema Tech, and True Value Vintage, and receive great discounts. So become a CITR member, get a free friends card, and feel the love.
I wanna love you and treat you right. I wanna love you.
Oh, yes. Rock and roll!
Were you going to have a party here tonight, son?
I mean, whatever happens, your toes are still tapping.
The Biltmore Cabaret at 395 Kingsway is Vancouver's hottest live showroom devoted to independent music of all genres.
We like Biltmore, yeah, like Biltmore.
Check out BiltmoreCabaret.com for upcoming show info and DJ nights.
And if you're a rock star, you famous,
rock out.
Are you sure this is legal?
I don't know. It's fun though, isn't it?
CITR has more friends than ever before. We've partnered with tons of local businesses to bring you great discounts in the communities where you live, work, and play. Maybe Main Street is your main drag. Present your Friends of CITR card at Red Cat Records, Lucky's Comics, Devil May Wear, Thriller, Blim, Hotbox, The Kiss Store, The Wallflower Modern Diner, RX Comics, Antisocial Skateboard Shop, Vinyl Records, Regional Assembly of Text, and Twig and Hottie to receive fabulous discounts. So become a CITR member, get a free Friends card, and feel the love.
Okay, here I am with the head coach of the UBC Thunderbird men's hockey team, Milan Dragicevic. Coach, first off, how's the off-season treating you so far?
Well, we're doing a lot of work as far as recruiting, trying to finalize our year-end meetings and see who's coming back, see who's not coming back, and watching a lot of junior hockey games right now. So all in all, we wish we would have played last weekend in Thunder Bay, but we got the opportunity to get a head start on recruiting.
Yeah, before we get into recruiting, Coach, and what's going to be going on for your team next year, your thoughts on that great national final game, St. Mary's beating the powerhouse, a team you get to see a lot every year, Alberta in overtime. Your thoughts on what I thought was really an excellent championship game.
You're right. An excellent game, back and forth. Alberta tied it up late. You know, I think with one of the things is that both, you see the powerhouse, the Eastern Division, Maritimes, is just as good as the Western Conference here, the CIS. And that's evident by the amount of national championships they've won over the years. Two evenly matched teams, a little bit different styles, but at the end of the day, obviously, you flip a coin in overtime. Alberta had their chances, but both teams are made up of skill, bigger players, older players, and I think the two best teams at the tournament were there.
Coach, on to your off season right now. You mentioned learning some players that are coming back, some that aren't. Any updates for some guys on that front?
No, not necessarily right now. Nothing as of note. Obviously, the graduating players that are leaving the program are going to be gone. Francois Tuat, Daryl Mame, Nick Duff. They're leaving the program, and then some other guys have to make some tough choices as to where they want to sit academically and athletically and to see if they want to be student athletes. But, you know, for us, the recruiting process is still going, and we're still working at it and trying to obviously fill the holes of what happened from the year before.
Coach, recruiting, obviously you're not – it's a tough one because, you know, obviously there's talk. I've heard you're going to be – CIS for at least 2 years. Obviously, there's talk you might be NCAA Division One, two more years in the CIS. But the problem is, if you're recruiting junior players, they might not be eligible to play in the the NCAA if that does happen. What is happening in the recruiting process with that topic in you?
Well, we could recruit junior players. It's just the major junior players that are not eligible to play in the NCAA. So there is a difference of recruiting major junior players compared to junior A players. Right now, we're just telling all the players that we have recruited or are recruiting that potentially UBC might apply for the NCAA, and if it does, we won't know what the repercussions are until we get accepted. If we don't get accepted into the NCAA, then it'll be business as usual. If we do, then we just have to take it day by day and see what the NCAA, what kind of rules they come down with, whether they grandfather the Western Hockey League players in for a year or two, or they say that you have to be NCAA eligible. So right now, those are the kind of things that we're trying to find out right now. But for us right now, Daryl, it's business as usual. We're still recruiting players. We're trying to get the best team that we can, trying to get the best possible players. But, yeah, we're being upfront and honest and telling every recruit possible that this is what might happen down the road.
Because this is a topic that has to be coming up with pretty much every major junior player you meet with. Are they bringing it up to you?
Well, some of them know, and some of them don't know. But even if they don't bring it up, we bring it up to them. We just have a duty. We don't want players that commit to UBC then all of a sudden in 6 months down the road be surprised by the fact that UBC might apply to the NCAA. So we are telling them, and some of them are bringing it up to us, and the other ones we're bringing it up to them. So that way there's no surprises. All the cards are on the table, and everyone knows the truth of what's happening.
Is there a bit of a flip side? Obviously, it has to be hard in that situation to recruit major junior players, but you mentioned the junior A players. Is it maybe something with these young guys who, you know, maybe you come to UBC, play for 2 years, then you're going to be in the NCAA, which might be a dream for some of these players, bigger scholarships available. Does it give you a bit of an edge on the junior A players?
Not necessarily, not right now, because most of the junior A players right now, the ones that are really good, have got scholarships already to the NCAA. And, for example, I believe BC this year has over 40, Alberta has over 30 scholarships already given. And, you know, we're trying to find that diamond in the rough that's 20 years old, like a Tyler Ruel or a Jordan Ingles or a Ryan Kokoski, Max Grassi, that don't have anything yet, that want to stick, you know, in BC or local and make our hockey team and make us better. So those are the kind of guys that we're trying to find. But we're getting a lot of inquiries from junior A players about the NCAA.
What are they asking you, Coach?
Well, they're asking us if we're applying, because the rumor is out there that we're heading to the NCAA in a year or 2 years, and obviously they want to be part of the program. And, you know, right now we can't say yes or no, because as the coach of the team, I'm not sure, you know, what's going to happen.
Yeah, what have you been told, Coach? I mean, I've been doing some digging, and, you know, it sounds like, you know, even your athletic director doesn't really know what's going on. It's really out of the athletic department's hands. What have you been told?
Well, I just exactly what your conversation with Bob has. It's with Bob Phillip is there'll be some kind of decision probably over the next 2 or 3 months, and it's probably going to come down from the president of UBC, and to see if he wants to pursue this, and that's all we've been told, really. Mm. And I don't know any more than you do, and so that's why for us, it's business as usual, and we keep doing what we're doing until we were told that no, you can't recruit these guys. So I'm pretty sure, I'm pretty confident that the athletic department wants to go NCAA. But it's also up to the higher-ups as well to make the final decision.
Yeah, no, I'm told it's the president, and then he's got like 7 executives also on that committee. So who knows what's going on there. I mean, Coach, the reason I do have to bring it up with you is talking to all these coaches, you're really the one, though, because of the major junior players, who it is really affecting your day-to-day operations the most.
It affects us the most, no question. And I've spoken to Bob Phillip, our athletic director, at length about this, and he completely understands where we're coming from. And, you know, there's a good chance that we might lose a lot of players, potential recruits that might choose not to come here because of the NCAA issue, which is unfortunate because we might not go. But, you know, a lot of players want to make their decisions, and that's the way it is. And, yes, it affects us. But you know what? We have a good nucleus returning, and we're going to be able to pick up some players, and we're working hard to get both major junior players and junior A players, so we'll be fine.
Terrific stuff. And, Coach, you know, obviously you guys played at the University of Minnesota this year. I want to ask you a question, and you've played other NCAA teams also. I want to ask you, sticking with it, and I'm sorry, but it is a topic right now, is, especially in the off season, is the infrastructure here for UBC with regards, obviously there's the new rink, and, you know, that would be fantastic, but is there the training facilities for these hockey players if, in fact, UBC became an NCAA Division I school, and you were competing with your Boston Colleges, Michigans, Minnesotas. Is all the infrastructure here that would need to be?
The infrastructure at the new facility, and that's a great question, is there. The office space, the workout facilities, the gym, rink, it's as good as a lot of NCAA facilities. All right, that part is on par with a lot of schools, stuff that we've seen from Alaska to Anchorage to Minnesota to Denver to Air Force, so many schools that we've been to. The issue that you're going to come across is the support that you receive in filling the building, okay? Because wherever we go, they fill the building. Minnesota 10,000, St. Cloud 7,000, Minnesota Duluth 5,000, and so on. And their school spirit is unmatched. It's incredible. All right? And the amount of staff that they have to provide the opportunity to people to watch the game, it's like it's an entertainment value for 2.5 hours. And that's something that the people will not be used to. The hockey itself is incredible. We have the facilities to do it, but we need the staff to make hockey as a Division I sport a high priority, and they got to make it into entertainment for 2.5 hours where people got to come and watch and have a great, great time, and that's the difference. Their school spirit is so huge at the NCAA level, Div I hockey.
So, yeah, you're saying, you know, it's basically going to be up to the students, and you will have to be putting out a major league product with regards to promotions and everything involved. It has to be at the top quality.
And I think that's what we see, and I think a lot of it, the NCAA, the product itself will sell itself to the general population, the media. It would be a new thing. People are going to want to come see it, and don't forget, you're playing against players that 35% of them get drafted into NHL. You know, so, or I should say 35% of players that get drafted to the NHL come from the NCAA.
Oh, really? It's that high now, hey?
Well, maybe it's not, you know, it's give or take between 25 to 35. If you really check, you know, how many players get drafted, it's a huge number. Obviously, majority of the players do come from major juniors, but when you look at getting drafted from the NCAA, they can draft a player that's 18, keep him in college for 4 years, and they don't have to sign him till he graduates.
Right.
Whereas major junior, they have 2 years to sign him. So there's a big advantage, and there's pros and cons of both.
Right. Coach, last question on this issue, and, you know, you're a great guy to talk to. You've played the NCAA Division I schools. You've coached in the Junior Hockey League. You coached the Vancouver Giants, of course. Give us the difference between major junior hockey and NCAA Division I hockey, because, you know, it is way down the road. If it does happen, that would be really the competition, although you're in different parts of the city, so who knows. But give us some of the differences in the style of play in the two leagues. I take it the NCAA is probably a lot more skill-oriented league, it seems, no?
Well, you know what? There is a little bit of a difference as far as the on-ice product. Number one, the NCAA, every rink that we've played at plays at Olympic-size ice rink. Huh. Okay, so what they get are players that can fly. They can skate, okay? You play NCAA teams, it's a track meet. Nobody traps. It's their forwards can fly. Their defensemen all jump up into the rush. It's an exceptionally really quick game, all right? The Western Hockey League, you're dealing with players that are a little bit younger, less mature because of the age, but also very, very tough and skilled. And to me, I think the Western Hockey League has a little bit more role players, and their third and fourth line guys are guys that have specific roles, whether they're to be aggressive, whether to be fighters, to penalty killers, and so on. Whereas to me, the NCAA are guys that can all skate, and they have exceptional skill. All right? And those are the kind of players that they recruit from the junior A leagues to go to the NCAA. And they really practice and preach puck possession and skill and skating. And I think both leagues are excellent. The Western Hockey League and the NCAA leagues are excellent training grounds for development players. But I think that when it comes to making a choice, it's all up to the individual and what kind of player they are.
And I take it no fighting in the NCAA.
And that's a huge difference, too, right? You know, I talked to one general manager, and he felt that, getting a 19 or a 20-year-old out of major junior or getting a 23-year-old out of NCAA, you're getting a more mature, polished player because he's 23, and you could sign him at 23 compared to a 19 or a 20-year-old coming out of the Western Hockey League. There's pros and cons to both.
Right. So, Coach, I take it your stance with the way your program is going right now, you just want this thing settled, don't you?
We want to know where we're at right now, and unfortunately,
it really affects us, but that's the reality of it. We've known about this for a long time. There's been a lot of discussion for the last 2.5 years about us going to the NCAA, and hopefully a decision will be made one way or another.
And Coach, it is safe to say that if you do go NCAA, you talk about, you know, school spirit, having to put a major league product, if it does happen, it really probably couldn't have happened without the Olympics and that rink being put right here on campus, eh?
Oh, we know that. We're one of the luckiest universities, hockey teams across North America to have that. So we're very fortunate. So all the moving and around that we've had to do for the last 5 years of not having a home, you know, at the end of the day, we're very fortunate to have that. So, it was really short-term pain for a long-term gain for our hockey program and UBC as well.
There you go. Great stuff. Milan Dragicevic, Coach, I hope this does get settled soon for you, and best of luck in those shark waters of the recruiting season.
Thanks very much, Darryl. Always enjoy talking to you.
Thanks, Coach. All right, that was Milan Dragicevic, head coach of the UBC Thunderbird men's hockey team. They did not make the playoffs this past year, but hoping to turn around in the near future. This is the team I give all the slack to, the head coach, for how they're doing right now. You heard Coach talking right there. They are getting absolutely murdered in the recruiting waters with the way it's going, where, you know, let's face it, you're a major junior player, and you've got, say, the University of Calgary coming up to you saying, we want you. UBC says, we want you. You're close. You're on the fence here. And then you realize, well, UBC, I might only be able to play for 2 years, and then they're going to go NCAA. Calgary, let's just go, right? I'm guaranteed my 5 years. Even if you'd rather go to UBC, how can you not choose Calgary? Even if you're like 60-40, maybe 70-30, at that point UBC has a shot, but UBC really has to blow these recruits away to be able to land them here. Interesting talking to Milan Dragicevic there about the infrastructure here at UBC. Basically just saying that if UBC, because that's a big one, you want to know, if they go NCAA, you know, talking to Vern Knopp earlier in the show, basketball, is there even a difference? NCAA Division II, CIS. I don't know. And I don't watch NCAA basketball, right? Division II. But football, same thing. Is there a difference between CIS, NCAA Division II? I, once again, don't really know. But when you're talking about NCAA Division I hockey, you're talking about really quite a big time here. You heard it. 25 to 35% of the players drafted in the National Hockey League come from NCAA. And, you know, I'll go back to 2 years in the draft. James Van Rimsdyk, second pick overall, Philadelphia. He was NCAA. Kyle Turris, third pick in the draft, Phoenix. He went and played the NCAA. Corey Schneider, of course, the Vancouver Canucks big prospect goalie who will be traded one day. He played for Boston College. Jordan Schrader, Canuck first-round pick last year. He plays at the University of Minnesota. So it would be unbelievable. And they've got the rink, and apparently, according to Milan, training facility, rink, office space, the infrastructure you need, they have it here at UBC. Are they going to have the staff support? But I assume that the university will just get that done. Because quite frankly, no offense, football, men's basketball, if NCAA does happen overnight, the hockey team becomes king on campus. No question about it in my mind. The hockey team becomes the king on campus. And so they'll get that done. Fan support, that'll be up to you, UBC students. But I suspect... I think it would be a really cool thing. And to be honest, the rink is the reason I think you go NCAA. I think it's a no-brainer because you've got to fill that thing. And what better way to fill it, even if you're not going NCAA in basketball long-term, Div 1, you've got that hockey team where, you know, you can pack that rink. So interesting talk there with Milan Dragicevic. All right, everybody, next week on this very show, we're going to try to have a UBC Thunderbird Women's Volleyball Spectacular. The UBC Thunderbird Women's Volleyball team, of course, three-time national champions. Just won their third national title about 2-3 weeks ago.
and they were actually undefeated this season. So really looking forward to that. The UBC Thunderbird women's volleyball team, hoping to have some of the ladies in studio. Talk to Coach Doug Reimer. We'll do a big old UBC Thunderbird women's volleyball show next week. That is it for me. I'd like to thank all my guests on the program today. Vern Knopp, BJ Bass, and Milan Dragicevic, head coach of the UBC Thunderbird men's hockey team. Okay, we're going to take there'll be a little break here, a little song coming up, about 10 minutes till Mike with Flex Your Head does hit the airwaves. I am signing off for me right now. There you have it. Okay, Mike with Flex Your Head will be coming up very shortly. You are listening to 101.9 FM, CITR Radio, Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada.
Picture yourself in a living room, your pipe and slippers set out for you. I know you think that it ain't too far, but I hear a call of a lifetime ring. Felt the need to get up for it. Oh, you cut out the middleman, can be for the middleman. You got no time for the messenger. Got no regard for the thing that you don't understand. You got no fear of the underdog. That's why you will not survive. I wanna forget how convention fits, but can I get out from under it? Can I cut it out of me? Oh. It can't all be wedding cake. It can't all be boiled away. I try but I can't let go of it. Can't let go of it. Wish you'd talk to the water boy. There's so much you could learn, but you don't wanna know. You will not back up an inch of it. That's why you will not survive. Tell you now, it may not go over well. Oh, and it may not be for a while. No way that I spell it out. But you won't hear from the messenger. Though I don't know about something that you don't understand. You got no fear of the underdog. That's why you will not survive. Right!
Ski and Snowboard Club is a nonprofit, democratic, student-run organization dedicated to promoting the sports of skiing and snowboarding and the associated lifestyle.
We endeavor to make skiing and snowboarding accessible and fun by actively seeking out the best deals and discounts for our members, as well as organizing trips to local ski areas and setting up numerous social events.
Come on one of our legendary trips and explore the glory of riding in British Columbia. Or join us at the bar to discover the true meaning of debauchery. Ask your roommate, ask your parents, ask the RCMP. Who has the most fun at UBC? You'll get the same answer. The Ski and Snowboard Club.
Yeah.
Joining the Ski and Board Club is easy. Come by our office, sub 115, anytime with some money to become a member. Your membership gives you access to all the deals offered by our sponsors, cheap beverages at our parties, an invitation to all club events, and of course, only members can come on the trips.
Yeah.
You're wasting me precious carbon dioxide.
I'm pumping it into the atmosphere, boy.
Thanks to global warming, the temperature will soon go through the roof, and then we'll have an endless summer.
Why do you want an endless summer, Mr. Krabs?
So I can open me latest money-making venture, the Krusty Pool.
The endless summer does sound fun.
And profitable.
Fun and profitable. Big business does it again.
Unfortunately, for those of us who aren't talking sponges, climate change isn't quite as fun. Luckily, there are many easy ways for students to conserve energy.
If chargers for cell phones, cameras, and laptops are left plugged in, they continue to draw electricity even when not connected to the device. This phantom load can be avoided by unplugging electronics and chargers after use. A more convenient option is to hook electronics up to a power bar, which can be switched off after use.
For more energy-saving tips, go to www.bchydro.com. This message brought to you by BC Hydro and CITR 101.9 FM Vancouver.
Last night, I left the bar. I was thirsty, and I don't drink wine. I was desperate. I needed blood. I turned to the only place I could. The only place that could possibly help me.
Hello, Canadian Blood Services.
Hello. I need some blood. A. Positive or negative, it doesn't matter.
I'm sorry, we're all out of A positive and negative. Would you like some O instead?
No. No, that won't do. Thank you. Good night. Save me. Save yourself. Give blood. Voluntarily.
This message was brought to you courtesy of the Canadian Blood Services and CITR Radio 101.9 FM.
1, 2, 3, 4.
When I walk down the street, I've been tripping on my feet, and my clothes, they don't match, and my blue jeans need a patch. It's cold outside. Is there someone there tonight? It's cold outside. Would you let me come inside and make it right? It's clear that I'm not getting better. When I fall down, you put me back together. My hairdo isn't cool, and my lips are lined with drool. I'm a mess since you left. You can use this fool. Useless too. It's cold outside. Is there someone there tonight? It's cold outside. Would you let me come inside?